outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
So Wayne, tell me about what's going on in Kenya. It's been a little bit since I've heard any kind of updates on what's going on with our brothers and sisters over in Kenya. They were on my heart the other day.
Well, great. Thanks for asking. I do get some email for now and then, people curious as to what's happened there. We completed that project about a year ago in terms of helping this impoverished set of tribes up in West Pokot. And they've had a few emergencies since then that we've been able to find some funds to help them out. So we continued that, medical kind of concerns. And then there was a problem with the water enterprise. We've left them with three different enterprises, a petrol station, a grain enterprise, and a water thing. The water thing was very serendipitous. They just happened to hit a well that hit an artesian something or other, and they can bottle it and sell it. But they had some problems because the government keeps changing the rules.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, they had bought a bunch of bottles, and now the government wants to tax the bottle when you buy it, not when you fill it and sell it.
Oh my gosh.
So then they bought, like, they got a really good deal on like 3 million bottles. So they owed a huge amount of taxes and they didn't have it. So they had to shut down the thing till we found some money. And it's just that's the kind of thing. There are two other tribes nearby that they continue to go, can you help them build an agricultural thing? And we did the wells for them and we got that going. And we're really hoping to help them kind of tap into other kinds of aid rather than just keep coming back to Lifestream as the resource. So we're looking at other ways that God wants to provide for them. But if that's somebody listening here that would say, hey, I've got an extra $30,000 to help them build an agricultural product, let me know, because I would love to put you in touch with them. And that may be the source that God has. But we felt like that project, just that whole thing, is just kind of, we've done a lot. We've done a lot in time. We still intervene at times and when there are emergencies. And amazingly, people continue to give to the Kenya thing. We get checks every week and month, and it seems that their ongoing needs are right about in that line with people who send us money because I guess God puts it on their heart. So, yeah, they're doing well overall. Overall, they're just, I mean, they've, it's the difficult part of the world, and the needs are ever present. Thanks for asking, because I know other people have asked me when I'm traveling this last week. They're asking, how's the Kenya thing going? Oh, my gosh. I forget to update people on it because the updates aren't as frequent as they used to be.
No, it's good to hear that, especially there was some question marks about whether or not the projects were going to continue to move forward. And so to hear that they are still moving forward and the water plant is still up and going, that's really encouraging to hear.
Yeah, those five tribes that became self-sufficient really have now the resources to conduct their life without some major flood or something that would upset that balance. But so we're excited for them. It seems like that's a successful thing and a season that's kind of almost coming to a close, but not quite.
Well, and it's wild to think just how that whole journey went. And I know that you were pretty leery about it becoming a thing that they were dependent on. And it's really cool, for example, them hitting an artesian well that is at the quality that could be bottled and sold commercially. I mean, that's awesome because that's, you know, God stepping in and providing a way for them to be self-sustaining and probably to employ other villages and to create more industry in that area.
Yeah, it's moving that direction. So yeah, I think we were grateful that we'd be able to get them to it and through it. And now they have some resources to which they can look to God and do the things they can do and see what happens. So that's been pretty cool.
So what's the best thing you heard this week, Wayne?
Oh, the best thing I heard this week?
Yep.
It's just out of the blue, someone, an older in the sense he's not inside our 20s and 30s, the people that we've been talking about gathering together in December, he just wrote me and said, it's on my heart, send you $500 to scholarship somebody to go to that thing. And I just think for somebody that's just an older, not fitting that thing, and rather than feeling like, well, I'm left out, I can't go or whatever, really felt like he wanted to help somebody go that needed to go but couldn't have the money. And so we haven't designated who that's going to yet. So if you need help going and want to go, let us know and we'll see what we can do. But I'm excited about just that kind of caring that maybe if God is stirring something and if it is important to bring these people together and they don't have necessarily resources to do that, and some people who do have resources want to help. So that inspired me this week. I would just say that's awesome. We didn't ask for it. We weren't raising funds for that, but somebody just had it on their heart and let me know. So that's pretty cool. How about you? What's the best thing you've heard this week?
I had a really interesting quote that came across my radar this morning as I was driving to work and just praying and spending some quiet time with God. And it came in the midst of a podcast, and it's a quote from Jared Wilson, who I don't know a whole lot about, but his comment was, what you win them with is what you are drawing them to. What you win them with is what you are drawing them to. And it was talking about these different leaders and how they use their charisma or whatever, but they're drawing people more to themselves than actually drawing people to the heart of Christ or introducing people to a conversational intimacy with Christ. And that one really caught me off guard. That was an intriguing one, because I had to kind of pause and think to myself, okay, Lord, the people around me that you've put in my world, am I drawing them to me with my stories or whatever, or am I introducing them to you? Am I using the life that you've given me and in the joy that you've given me as a way to point people back into a relationship with you? Wow. Yeah, it was really interesting.
And then that's just bait and switch, isn't it? I draw them to me, and then I try to pass them off to Jesus, but they came for me. So yeah, that's a good thought. Well, I'm Warren Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And this is The God Journey. I want to welcome you back to it. So, wow, this is crazy. We're doing this. It's probably, it's 8:30 my time since I've started this morning early in Kansas City and have made my way home today. And then this was the only time you had to record. So, man, I usually, when I come home from a trip like this one, especially this one, I just want to roll up the carpet for a couple of days and get my brain back in the same time zone. This was one crazy trip.
So fill me in. I want to hear what happened. So you were introducing something that God's just kind of building on your heart. And this was kind of a test pilot type thing with a group of people, correct?
Yeah. For the public sharing. Yeah.
Okay.
But my trips are never about the public sharing. I mean, I do that because a number of people can gather and there's some things that can happen in that framework, but
yeah.
For me, it's always the personal stuff that happens around that. So, and this was a trip that, I mean, I haven't been out in 18 months on this kind of a trip because of the pandemic. So we've been sticking close to home and getting all the other projects done that I've been wanting to get done. And when this one came up to go, and then the whole Delta variant was getting to be a big deal, particularly in that part of the country. And so, you know, do I go, not go? And just really felt clear to go. But an interesting thing happened on the way to this trip, because this was a trip I'd planned to do before the pandemic, and it was to meet with a small Bible study group of guys on a Friday morning, and it was to do this workshop for New Jerusalem Missions, which is it used to be an AIDS hospice kind of outreach, and it's kind of branched beyond that now. It is doing people affected with AIDS, but it's also just transitional folks coming out of any kind of struggle in their life, addiction or whatever. So it's, you know, it's people that are transitioning back to try and find a way to let Jesus navigate them in real life instead of having dropped out with drugs or alcohol or whatever else may have impacted them. So, and that's Penny, who wrote about "And He Loves Me," gal that went back and cared for her husband, ex-husband. And so that's always fun. I always try and zero in on them if I can. We had a great time. But when I was scheduling this trip, I booked my ticket, which that's kind of, I always send out some emails, you know, if anybody wants to do anything else in the area, let me know. And then when I hear back or don't hear back, then I make my travel plans. And I had booked a flight in and out of Wichita and just to spend the weekend there. And as moment I within an hour of booking the ticket, I get an email from some lady that just says, "You open to hanging out with some people in Kansas City."
Hmm.
And so there was a sense of this might be a God thing. I mean, I have that sense pretty quick when I get emails and stuff. I don't like, okay, I need to pray about this for 3 days and see if God, there was a warm spot in my heart for it. So I went immediately and canceled the ticket because I'm still in the 24-hour window, so I don't have to pay for it. And then it gives me a couple of days to kind of sort out whether or not we're going to go up to Kansas City as well. And I've met a brother there in the last few months that I've been talking to anyway. So a reason to go to Kansas City would be fun. The fact that she said, "Oh, you just want to hang out with some people who've gone through a pretty painful church situation," that intrigues me. And then she mentioned they were a minority couple. And with what's going on in the world, and we actually had this conversation because it is a minority couple. And they were asking me know, there are a lot of Asians or Hispanics or African Americans that are in this God journey kind of space. And I said, there's some, but it's mostly, I'd say by far, it's mostly white people. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that other traditions are particularly, I don't know how to say this without running afoul of some political correct, whatever, but it seems to me that people who've been at this, who look like me, have a greater freedom to move away from structures that made them comfortable. And some of the minority communities are much more locked in, particularly to legalistic kinds of things in some places. And I know it's not true of everyone, but I think the observation is there's an increasing number of people. So whenever I hear minority couple, I'm in. After working on Language of Healing and my relationship with Arnita, and I'm like, hey, I'm in. Let's talk. So I felt really good about it and kind of probed it. And then I know this ticks people off because I got invitations from people over here that like 10 years old. And I haven't been there yet because I just put them in a list and say, God, lead me there when it's time. And then here somebody calls me and I'm within a day saying I'll be there. And that really set the tone for this entire trip. It just, there were spontaneous things that just kept arising. I literally went from 8 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night in a constant series of ever-changing conversations. And even the spaces I had in my schedule just filled up. I was at this Bible study with these guys on Friday morning in Wichita. And by the time I then had some time with an old college friend and then moved up to Newton and met with a Presbyterian pastor who'd been reading a lot of my stuff and wanted to talk, I started getting texts back from the gym where the Bible study was hosted, but it wasn't hosted by the gym. We just used a room there. But somehow what I had talked about that morning had spread through the gym. So I'm getting a call from people, there are emails there saying, can you come back? There's people here that want to talk to you. And the owner of the company would like to talk to you. And then there's some friends, and this was a separate email. One is the owner of the company would like to talk to you about being on a podcast because it's about optimizing your life and it has a spiritual faith component to it. And he heard stuff from the morning things. He said, can you come back and talk? We'd like to, yes. I'm going to, I'm 30 minutes out of Wichita, but I've got to go back there for a dinner. So okay, I got a ride back down there at 3 o'clock. And then there was a couple that I met 10 years ago and had some impact on their marriage a few years later, just in some phone call stuff. And then I haven't seen them. We've corresponded occasionally. Turns out I didn't even know. Last I knew, they were in California. He's a gym physical trainer at the gym. And he's heard somebody talking about stuff that they heard in a Bible study. He's going, that sounds familiar. I said, who is the guy? And it's Wayne Jacobson. Wayne Jacobson. I know Wayne Jacobson. So he sends me an email. So I go back from 3 to 4 and hang out with this one guy. And then from 4 to 6, I hung out with this other couple. It was so good to catch up with them and see what God was doing in their life. And then 6 o'clock, there's a dinner of about 13 of us or something like that, meeting in a restaurant. And then that was the order of the day. Things just kept going. And it was extraordinary. I love the conversations I get into. And this couple I met with up in Kansas City that I came for, just spent a day with them. They were free during the day on Monday. And then that evening they had friends come over and they were just all over the map. They'd been through some church hurt. There was Shaq stuff. There was He Loves Me stuff. There was My Friend Lewis stuff. It just kept going and going. And I tell you what, I came back even thinking about trying to do a podcast. All that stuff. But it was a great trip. I think One of the major themes we kept circling back to, because I did this chart thing that I trying to figure out some way to do it on the God journey someday so we can explore it with more people. But number one, I found that people really resonated with it. And it really spawned the discussions I hoped to, because this little flow chart of how we find our way into God's way of living instead of our human religious ways of sorting through stuff. And it really gave people a place to go, let's go back to this place in the chart. I want to ask about this and ask. So it really helped guide a discussion that I think people told me afterwards, this is so helpful. This puts a lot of things together that were just kind of random pieces in my life. And this is kind of a little bit of the puzzle. Like you get the border around a puzzle, or you get a big slice of it in the middle. And now the other pieces say, oh, well, this goes here and this goes. So I think, and it's all the gist of it is how do I live by every word that God provides, the thing that Jesus was talking about? How does the Spirit lead me? How do I be windblown? How do I live in the breath of the Spirit instead of in my own head and reasoning and physical abilities or lack thereof? And it's a lifetime kind of thing. It's not, here's four things you can do, and you're sailing on in the Spirit. It's just a way to think about your life. And so, yeah, I know that's probably frustrating. People listening is going, tell us. And it's a little more convoluted than I can do right here, right now. But I was touched by it. And one of the things that kept coming up is, and this came up out of someone's comment, which this is what I love. This is what I haven't done for 18 months. But a lot of things I grow in, when I get in a conversation with other people about it, I'm learning as much as they're learning, because they're adding comments and questions, and then it fills out some stuff in my own heart. And one of the things was on this one side of the chart where it's more out of, where we live out of ourselves, even with good ambitions for Jesus. It's not even just, you know, fleshy stuff. It's the more the religious performance kind of thing. And it was talking about, we're talking about, you know, answered prayer and walking with Jesus. And it was like this side, I've always, what they said, I think something like this, and I had so many conversations, this is probably not even close to an accurate paraphrase, but it was something like, I'm realizing that all my prayers and my appreciation of God's blessing comes when he meets my comfort zones. Hmm. Like that's how I base everything. So I have this comfort zone over here and I want God to serve it. And I consider myself blessed when I don't have a financial need, so I don't have to think about it. I don't have a physical need, or I'm not going through a struggle or a relationship crisis of some kind. I really, and I always pray into my comfort zones, and God frustrates that. It's like, God, I can't get God to serve my comfort zones, because a lot of the chart is, how do we live inside what's true? And what's true is almost, for me, always outside my comfort zone. If I stay in my comfort zones, I really miss what it is to know him, and I really miss where he's leading me. And I think the whole essence of the chart is that somehow God becomes the comfort. It's not, the comfort zone is not circumstantial. It's not when my expectations are met. It's not when my life is challengeless. And I'm as much as anybody, I enjoy seasons where it's all refreshing and joy and there's no challenge. I enjoy that. I tell people, stay in that as long as you can. But life, and truth, I think, always invites us down a different path than our comfort zones allow. And when you know God well enough and you grow in the knowing of God so that he doesn't have to serve your comfort zone, or which he doesn't anyway, but you're not trying to make him do that, is where you really have the opportunity to discern truth, to build trust, because I'm walking outside my comfort zone inside something that's provoked me. And then the fruit of that is always better than our comfort zones ever provide. So yeah, the fruit of taking a risk, and there it is. And so we got into that a lot, which I thought was awesome because I love that.
And that honestly brings me back to a podcast series that I'm working on, and I recorded an episode with a good friend of mine that,
you know, you can't keep talking about recording these episodes without actually releasing them someday. You realize that?
I know. Okay. I realize this.
It's like my chart. I've got this wonderful thing I'm doing, but nobody can see it. Go ahead.
So my friend Joe Griffin, super awesome guy. I met him through just a God style way. I had a mutual friend that said, hey, this guy is going to be within an hour and a half of you. Is there any way you'd be willing to drive up and meet him? I was like, sure, why not? So anyway, drove up and met him, and we just had it, that launched a really cool start to a friendship. And so we were talking in our podcast about how to live a life worth living. And he basically walked away from a major corporate job. He had all these like security things, these comfort zones that he had built. And yet he was bored. And his heart, he felt like his heart was slowly dying. And he felt like he wasn't inviting his son into the type of life that he wanted his son to live or to aspire to live. And so he talked about this space where he's working in his passion, and I don't want to give away too much, but now he's working in his passion.
That would be too nice to our listeners.
That'd be too easy, right? Just like your try. That'd be way too easy.
This is the most frustrating podcast we've ever recorded, I think, for our listeners.
Sorry, God-journey listeners. But he talked about how, because I asked him, I was like, so do you, like, how do you deal with that space in your stomach where there's kind of, it's tied up in knots, there's kind of that flutter, that almost like anxiety, anticipation, like I'm out on a ledge, and if God doesn't come through, I don't know what I'm going to do. And his response stopped me, like just straight up stopped me. And he said, Kyle, if I ever lose that, then I'm done with what I'm doing. Because he's like, I know that I'm not living in the life that I'm supposed to be living. Hmm. And he talked about how if I am leaning on my own strength and I'm making things happen in my own will, then I'm not living the type of life that I'm supposed to live. Because now I'm living in my comfort zones. Now I'm living in within the limitations of what I have, instead of walking in this almost like tightrope walk over a massive canyon, wide open air, and my stomach is tied up in knots. Because if God doesn't come through, then I might be in some serious trouble.
Wow. Some people have said, you know, if you don't live every day without that exhilaration in your gut over something that's beyond you that you're involved in, that you begin dying. Yeah, which is really, especially if all of us are looking for our comfort zones. We're living for our comfort and convenience. And most of my prayer life over the first 40 years of my journey, especially, less so now, I think, as I've been on this side of this journey, but have all been about getting God inside my comfort zone, getting God to serve that. I don't want to be on the edge. I don't want to be at the precipice that says I need to be caught if something goes wrong here. Yeah. And if we're not willing to do that, because so much of our own human wisdom is just that. It's our best wisdom about stuff. And when God's inviting us into life, that is a different journey. And it's not necessarily what we want. It's not what we'd choose. It's not what we can wrap our natural mind around. It's simply this leading of the Spirit that allows us to go, okay, I'll take a step. And it's usually, I think for so many of us, it's not, here's where I'm leading you, here's a map for the next 6 years. It's, there's the next rock in the creek to put your foot on. And you can't see the next rock. You can't see where the shore is on the other side. And I love the way now, I didn't used to, but I love the way now God does that. Find your fullness in me, not in the security of what you're doing or the certainty of the outcome you're hoping for, but be willing to follow where I lead you, because almost always where God's leading me, getting there is not a direct route.
Yeah.
You can't get there directly. You've got it that way and then this way, and then this has to be shaped, and then that door opens. And so it really, I like telling people this now, I think the will of God unfolds. People pray for the will of God, like, I want the next plan of job and income and where I live, and I want all that sorted out, instead of, you know what, if I just wake up today inside of him and follow what nudges and trust my yuck meter and just kind of live inside my perception of the way he's leading me, then I'm going to end up exactly where he wants me. And that's not only good for him, I think it always is good for him, but then us fulfilling the purpose for which he created us inside a fallen world is also really good for us.
And good for those that are in our circle too, right? Because I feel like that is the life, that's the invitation that so many people are looking for. And yet there's that trust piece, right? There's that hope piece of, you've got to have a rock that you're jumping in, that you're hopping from spot to spot to spot to cross the river, right? Because I feel like some people that I know, they just start fording into the river. There's no rock underneath them. There's no like kind of path. There's no trust there. It's just, I'm going to force my way across the river. And then they get hit by that undertow and they get swept away. And they're like, well now what? Like, why? And yet it was very much about, okay, I'm going to force this into existence. I'm going to do this on my own. Instead of the joy of actually working through that relational process with God and exploring that and adventuring with him in that. Because I love the idea of unfolding, and especially like I cross a lot of rivers when I'm fly fishing. That's something that happens all the time. And often like you'll be hopping and you'll get like three or four stones down the way. And then you've got to hop backwards a few stones because there isn't a path to keep going directly forward. You got to go to the left, or you got to go upstream, and then you got to kind of go this way, and it just, you don't know.
And
because you don't, it's not a suspension bridge across the river without any potholes.
Occasionally you'll get a suspension bridge, but mostly you don't. And I like the trial and error of that, because I think there's people, because what we're talking about, and I was going to go back to the podcast I did with Lewis about the beauty of selflessness.
Yeah.
We're really talking in the areas of taking a risk and living at risk and, you know, the beauty of selflessness. If people do what you just said, I'm going to do that on my own. I'm going to put myself in a risky thing and defy God to come through. That, now, those are the temptations that Jesus had, right? I'm going to do something big to prove God's worth. And God doesn't, it's not that. It's not us defying God. It's not even the beauty of self. Oh, God, Jesus finds sacrifice beautiful. So I'm going to wake up today and I'm going to do the most ridiculous sacrifice. I'm going to give all my money away and I'm going to do all that in my own strength to try and prove God's big enough. And I hope what people hear is that's all inside the temptations that Jesus had. That's not what we're talking about. I think even when you get to the beauty of selflessness or you get to living at risk, we're talking about people who are down the journey a bit, who have a sense of leading. And if you don't have that right now, don't say, well, I need to do that. So I'm going to start doing something risky or something sacrificial, or don't, because that's how asceticism, that's how all the ugly stuff starts. What you want to do is say, Jesus, would you begin to reveal to me yourself? Would you make me secure in your love? Because as he makes us increasingly secure in his love, then we're more likely to see the ways God invites us down a road that's going to be more at risk. Yeah. And when that trust grows, then it seems possible. I've told the story before, but probably not a lot. I did a couple of times this weekend. 2 years before I got booted from the fellowship I co-pastored in, I was on a walk and felt like God said, I want you to resign your salary and trust me to provide for you. That didn't last in my brain 10 seconds. I didn't say God was telling me this. I had this thought. And then the next thought is, well, that's what everybody wants. You know, yes, God, if you help me win the lottery, I'll resign my salary. And I never play the lottery. So that'd be a miracle if I won the lottery. So I didn't do it. And then 2 years later, I get booted. So now I don't have an income. And I also don't have people around me who are part of that thing. I don't know what would have happened 2 years before if I just said, like, I'm going to keep doing my deal and resign my salary. I couldn't put my head around that space to even try it. Mm. And then 2 years later, I'm now don't have a salary. And I've got God in my heart saying, I want you to trust me. I'm going to take care of you. Just keep doing what you're doing. And I'm, what does that mean? Because I'm obstinate enough to say, I'm not going to help you, man. I'm not raising support. I'm not going to ask people for money. If you want to provide for Sarah and me, you provide. And if you don't, I'm going to get a real job, because I'd rather have a real job than live off people's generosity. And which really isn't people's generosity. If it's God telling you to do it, then it's really trusting God to provide.
Yeah.
2 years later, after, and that was a month-to-month thing for Sarah and me starting out. It was at the end of every month, do we have enough to pay our bills? Okay, we'll keep going this road. And if we don't, because Sarah was really like, I've known so many people go into bankruptcy, quote unquote, living by faith. And so our deal was, you know, we've got some backup in a savings account. So we get the end of a month and we can't pay our bills for that month. I get in a real job. Now, 2 years of doing that, we're finally becoming a little bit relaxed. And then I'm walking in the same place outside our home where we lived in Visalia, where God had spoken that to me. And honestly, hadn't thought about it in the 4 years between, the 2 years up to losing my job, the 2 years after watching him provide. And I walked by there and it dawned on me. That really was God. I couldn't see it then. I could see it 4 years later, because God had walked me into that reality. And I really want people to hear that. We can talk about the beauty of sacrifice. We can talk about letting God's will unfold and being willing to take a risk. But that's inside his leading, not inside our presumption, not what we were trying to force God's hand. So the start of this is not go find something big to do for God. The start of this is the prayer that says, Father, show me your love. Teach me how to live inside an expanding revelation of your love. That love rest and play. Let that relationship connect. Let me begin to see in little ways that, yeah, I can in fact trust you. Now I'm ready, maybe 5, 6, 8 years down the road, to risk some comfort zone stuff, because I have a God big enough to hold me in what you said, even when I get it wrong, even when I go down this path a few steps and go, ooh, this has more Wayne than God in it. So you back out of it. But then you don't lose your whole faith that God just led me and then just dropped me in the middle of the river. There's such a process here that I really want people to embrace and not just assume I can jump from step one to step seven without God growing my trust in his love and setting me at rest in him and risking very small comfort zone things and singing's enough so that then I can risk a bigger one. I love that process of that. And I hope people can appreciate this is a journey. Don't start at the finish line because you will kill yourself and those around you who love you.
Just the idea or putting in the context of a relational process, because That's the whole deal, right? Because if you're just beginning the relationship, the first place you start is, who are you? I want to get to know you.
Yeah.
I want to get to know, what is your character? What is your thoughts about me? Are you somebody that I can trust my confidence with? Are you somebody that I can be vulnerable around? And that's all a process. There's a lot of steps in building that initial relational foundation. And if you don't have that initial relational foundation with God and you go and jump off a cliff, but don't even know, like have no idea about his love for you, his character towards you, you've done some life together, you've learned that, yeah, sometimes he has a really great sense of humor. Actually, I think he does a lot of the time.
He does.
But those are all like those contexts. You know, for example, I wouldn't go and just share my entire life, all my deepest, darkest things, and then give the person the title to my home and or the deed to my home and my bank account information that I met on the street yesterday. You wouldn't do that, right? Because there's no relational context. There's no journey. There's no trust that's been developed. And I think that's where you have to start is, who do you know God to be? Where is your relationship at? Do you know his voice? And then go from there.
In that flowchart, we talk about the early stage of this is believing something simple God's revealing to you in, and then let this relationship grow. And the prayer, God, what is it about your love I don't know? Or God, would you show him how much you love me? And I would tell people, let him have a decade to answer that. And you see the look on people's faces like, what? Like, we're such a hurry. I look at my trajectory the last 30 years of learning to live loved. And things I wished God could do in a week or a month or a year, there's just things I'm entering into now saying, I would have loved to live this way 30 years ago, but I was not ready to. The temptations are all about that. Throw yourself off the temple and God will protect you. Only if God's telling you to jump off the temple, not as a, I'm going to apply this scripture to my expectation and hope for the best here. Or, you know, the first one about changing stones into bread, there's nothing in the law of Moses that says you can't turn stones into bread. Jesus is likely only days away from changing water into wine, which isn't all that much different, right? And what the point he's making to the enemy is not, you're asking me to sin. That's not the temptation. The temptation is you're asking me to presume on God's provision. And man only lives by what God provides, what God gives, every word that comes from the mouth of God. So now we want to be people that, okay, I want to learn what those words are. And I think that's as individual as it is for us. We've somehow interpreted those words now to say every word that God provides is the scriptures. And we read through them and we create rules and expectations and guidelines. And then we follow the scriptures. Jesus is not talking about, he's saying the immediacy of God's presence, what God wants to develop in us, is a sense of how he leads. And it's not always voices, it's nudges, it's people you meet where you have compassion for and pursue the relationship. Other people you meet, there's not a connection there. And you don't have, it's learning to live inside those nudges and revelations and maybe days and weeks apart in the early stages of this. Not because God's not saying anything, it's because we're not recognizing much. And the more that love and trust grows, which he does, he's the one winning us to love, winning us to trust. As that grows, then, we're going to be able to go on a better journey of being able to nudge away from my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And embrace whatever it is that goes on. I got this email when I got back from the trip today. So this is fresh off the presses, man. It's a woman I've had some correspondence with, and she said about this, I really appreciate your kind and gracious response. It helped, as has so many of the dialogues between you and Kyle. It's just new and a fresh way of thinking for me. A bit like when Lewis told you he wanted to learn how to make bricks. You and Kyle are having discussions about how God often doesn't rescue us from situations or sometimes consequences, but he always walks through them with us. We fell behind on our rent this year between my health and various bills. Recently, we were just evicted. I'm a huge worrier, and I had heard and I feared this was coming. I had been praying for months that God would provide the money from somewhere. We were getting so much help from a dear friend and my parents, but I felt myself getting frustrated that the people who could really help us weren't. Because I wanted to be saved. I wanted to avoid the scary stuff, probably the shame. In the end, my husband and I realized we need to take my parents up on an earlier offer to move in with them until we can get back on our feet, which is, and she has some things that might unfold there. And in that moment, it actually felt good to walk through this situation, knowing God is there, and this is life, and you can't escape it, rather than be saved from the situation. How cheap that would have been compared to this journey of walking through this sweeter outcome with God. Just, man, how that letter progresses from worrying, and I want it. And that's where most people just stop with the disappointed prayer. I'm praying that God would save me, and he didn't save me. Because he was going to save you through, not from. And just the whole shift to now, it's, I would have hated to miss this beautiful journey we're on, even though the answer she was originally praying for didn't come. I love this email. I just read, I went, oh my gosh, this is the journey right here. Yeah. It's learning to live by what God's doing. Sometimes he saves us from. Sometimes he saves us through. And that's not our choice, that's his. And it's not based on God's whim, like, I like you, so I'm going to save you from. And I don't like you, so I'm going to have to save you through. There's a larger purpose unfolding in the gravity of a broken world where God's purpose is not just what makes Wayne happy or at ease, but what guides Wayne into the truth of who I am and into the circumstances in which I want his life to touch other people. Now, that's just outside my comfort zone. I mean, I built those comfort zones so I could feel safe and not need God in my life. That's why I built them.
Yeah.
And then when he asks you to vacate them, I'm telling you what, I like her. It's the best. It's never the best going in. Just like this trip we talked about, Kyle. I thought about this flying home today on the plane. I couldn't have gone on this trip 10 years ago.
Hmm.
I would have missed so much because I just... No, I can't go. I've already left town. I can't go back. So blah, blah, blah. Or I just would have dismissed things because of sticking to a schedule or the expectation. And I look at this and I go, this was so much fun, but it was nuts. It was, I'm going here. I'm going there. This thing comes up and I'm responding to it. And it just was, and I'm flying back on the plane going, that was amazing. There was never a place to land where I felt secure in what was going on. Not once. But enough nudges and enough stones in the creek that kept appearing that I could be part of something. Even 5-6 years ago, I'd say, yeah, I don't think I had enough rest in life unfolding to see the spontaneous things God was creating.
And that's after 20, 25 years of walking in this new relationship.
Yes.
And so I hope that's an encouragement.
Yes.
To the people that are listening to this, because I'm about 17 years down the road in this, and I'm like, God's really just starting to press into some of those comfort zone areas at a whole nother level. And I mean, and for you, who's been walking in this for over 20 years, to say that, man, or excuse me, almost 30 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So to say, like, 5 years ago, I would have missed what God was up to. I wouldn't have had the rest to be able to allow that to unfold and the curiosity to see what the Holy Spirit's up to and to allow it to unfold and to be surprised by what God might have around the next corner. I love that. And yet that took over 2 decades of relational context before you were able to start moving and operating in a deeper level of rest.
And yet it isn't just like I'm start moving now. It's like that whole 28 years has been this. It's been smaller things, things that I couldn't have lived then, but I lived in the things that God was opening to me then. And they were as exciting back then. So it's not like we're telling people, yeah, you got to wait 30 years before this really gets fun. We're saying it's fun from day one when you're learning to nudge into the things that God wants, even if you're missing a lot of. I was telling people this weekend, I think I miss genuinely, and this is probably being overly generous to me, but genuinely, I probably miss 90% of what God's revealing on any given day. I'm enjoying the 10% I'm seeing. And I don't know about this last trip because it seemed really grace and there was no other time to do anything. So if there were other opportunities I missed, I just don't even know what that would have been, except talking to angels in the middle of the night or something. But I hope what people are hearing is this whole process is fun. This whole process of even the first few steps of maybe just sticking a toe out of your comfort zone and finding out, because God led you to do something and then it turned out in a way that was wonderful. And you go, okay, it was a small thing, but for me, it's a big thing then.
Yeah.
So don't try to live in my freedom or yours. Speaking of yours, Kyle, but you, God has a process for you today of just in letting his nudges, his word, his insight, his compassion rise to the forefront of your heart, and it'd be small things, but man, follow those small things. It might be a way you love your spouse. It might be a way you do something special for your kid. It might be somewhere you at work for a difficult person. And it might be the smallest thing, but that's where trust and love and rest all open up. And so we're not saying wait 30 years. No. What we're saying is don't go flying off the temple until God tells you to fly off the temple. And in the meantime, let him lead you in the much smaller ways that begin to build your confidence that I've got a God who's got my back, even if he's not serving my comfort zone. That's what I love about this letter from this lady.
Yeah.
He didn't meet my comfort zone. And yet we've had to move back in with my parents, which nobody wants to do that, right?
Yeah.
But for what they're going through, this is a step to get them to something else. And now she says how cheap it would have been compared to this journey of walking through the sweeter outcome with God.
I love those words. Like, that's such an awesome email. Oh my gosh.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.